On Friday evening, March 29th, one of the most artistically adventurous and innovative arts ensembles in the United States is taking over Stevens Auditorium in Ames, and that's the San Francisco Symphony. I'm Jacqueline Hallbloom for IPR's Iowa Art Showcase, and we're fortunate to have joining us by phone the San Francisco Symphony's bass trombonist and an Iowa native, John Engelkiss. And thank you so much for joining us today, John.
Oh, you're welcome. Glad to be here.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself and your Iowa roots.
Well, I grew up in Parkersburg, which, of course, is just down the road from Cedar Falls, and graduated from high school there in 1972, and then attended UNI. I got my undergrad degree there, and that was broken up briefly by a stint down with the Florida Symphony in Orlando, Florida. And I came back to school and at UNI, finished up, and then did my master's degree at Northwestern.
So apparently you heard the New York Philharmonic when you were a young man.
I did. It was the year that C.Y. Stevens opened, and it's their 50th anniversary, I believe, right now. So apparently I was about 15 years old, 14 or 15 years old, and I heard Seiji Ozawa conduct the New York Philharmonic.
Well, that is one of the big deals about Stevens Auditorium in Ames is that was one of their missions from the very beginning, that they bring in world-class symphonies. And
right.
I think that started maybe in 1969 with Dr. Alvin Edgar, and they brought in the New York Phil for like 5 days. So you heard one of those concerts. I think it's so cool that you're going to be back there, and
yeah.
It's kind of coming full circle again.
It is, exactly. And the thing is, I have never played in C.Y. Stevens Auditorium. While I was in college, there was never an opportunity to go play there. I'm actually anxious to do it. I'm curious after all these years.
I think it's fabulous that this is the way it is happening. And Stevens Auditorium actually formed the Ames International Orchestra Festival Association,
right,
which helps promote and facilitate these live orchestral music and
right.
outstanding ensembles.
Well, it was an incredible resource when I was in school in Iowa, both high school and college, in that I heard pretty much every major orchestra in the world, certainly European and American orchestras, while I was in school. I mean, I heard everybody, and it was an incredible resource for, you know, somebody who's going to school out, you know, kind of out, you know, somewhat removed from big urban areas, that to be able to hear that many orchestras and to hear that kind of music on a regular basis. It's great.
So before we dive into your San Francisco Symphony concert and tour on March 29th that you're going to be in Ames, tell us a little bit about the San Francisco Symphony, because they're a pretty amazing organization.
Yeah, this is my 38th year in the orchestra. And when I started, of course, they were sharing the opera house with the opera and ballet, actually. So there was one venue that three different organizations were sharing. And so when they built Davies Hall in San Francisco, the San Francisco Symphony moved over across the street there and were able to go to a year-round season. And it created a lot of openings because some people stayed with the opera and the ballet and some people went with the symphony. But it created a large number of openings in the San Francisco Symphony, and my position was one of those. So Ader DeVart was the music director at that time, and I don't know how many positions he had to fill, but there were a lot, and went on for years and years before they finally got the orchestra stabilized. And then after Ado left, then Herbert Blumstedt was our music director for, I think, 12 years. And he inherited a very good, very young, inexperienced orchestra, and he really taught us how to play well together and learn repertoire and really, you know, form us as a great ensemble. And then after he left, Michael Tilson Thomas came. He inherited a very good orchestra that could and would do anything. And he was a music director that could and would do anything as well. So it's been an incredible run of, I guess, 25 years with Michael.
And you do 220 concerts a year,
right?
Which is phenomenal.
That's a lot.
And you do all these other things in the community. You have adventures in music. You have instrument training, youth orchestras,
right.
keeping the score, this K-12, all these different things that are happening with the San Francisco
yeah,
Symphony.
Yeah, right. And of course, a lot of those things, they weren't all extra on top of those performances. They were incorporated into those performances and into that schedule. So we were doing a lot of things simultaneously. So for instance, if we were doing a subscription series of, say, Mahler Fifth Symphony, that week, then they would also videotape and also record that, both for audio recordings and for television. So everything was going on simultaneously. It was a busy place, though, I have to tell you.
But that makes it fun and exciting.
It was fun. And for 22 of those years, I was also assistant personnel manager. And so I was quite involved with, you know, the operation of the orchestra and getting people on stage and keeping track of everything. So I was busy.
I bet you were busy. Well, I read also that you founded the Bay Brass.
I didn't personally. I was one of the three founding members. And that came from a group at Northwestern. When I was going to school there, we had a group called Pitts and Brass. And they performed fairly regularly. And then, by coincidence, three of us ended up out here in San Francisco. One was the tuba player in the ballet, and then the other is one of our French horn players in the orchestra. And the three of us formed the group. That's been going for a long time now, too, I think 30 years or something.
And you also are on the faculty at the San Francisco Conservatory of Music.
Right. I've been there, I think, about 32, 33 years, something like that.
John, you are one amazing guy. So tell us about this concert that the San Francisco Symphony is going to be performing on March 29th at Stevens Auditorium.
Well, it's the last stop on our national tour. We start off in Seattle and then wind our way up to Boston and Washington, D.C., and then come back through the Midwest and end up in Ames. And so it's just one of the two programs that we're doing on the tour. And happens to be the one that I play on. The other program I don't play much on at all. So it was lucky that, you know, after all this time to be able to play in Ames, that I actually am going to be on stage and make a contribution. So I'm happy about that. So we do Le Tombeau de Couperin and Sibelius' Second Symphony.
And the Violin Concerto is in E minor, Opus 64 by Mendelssohn.
That's right.
And Alexander Kerr will
that's
be
right.
soloing on that, and he's
right.
quite an amazing violinist, so I think that's going to be fabulous.
Yeah, yeah. And we had our first performance of that last night here in San Francisco.
So this Le Tombeau de Couperin, do you want to say anything briefly about that?
I don't know too much about it, you know, no trombones, although I've heard it many times. It's a beautiful piece. I love it, and I'm a big Ravel fan anyway, but it's a very beautiful piece, a small piece, almost chamber orchestra size. Just a very lovely, very tuneful little piece.
Ravel, as a tribute to his friends, he wrote it following World War I, and he lost many friends and colleagues in the war, and each movement is dedicated to a different colleague, and he wrote it first for piano, and then he condensed it down and did just four movements for orchestra.
Uh-huh. And I didn't know that about that piece, but I know that he did have a number of friends that he wrote music for, one of which was the left-hand piano concerto. For an acquaintance who was a pianist that I believe lost the use, maybe even lost an arm or lost the use of his right arm in the war.
And Alexander Kerr used to be the concertmaster of the Royal Concertgebouw Orchestra, and he teaches, I believe, at Indiana University at the Jacobs School of Music now. And he just solos and has played with about everyone and every orchestra in the world. So I think that is going to be a fabulous, fabulous performance. Well, tell us about Sibelius' Symphony No. 2 in D, Opus 43, that's going to close the concert.
It's a very well-known piece, and it's a very lovely piece. I don't know much about the history of the piece. We did record it with Herbert Blomstedt years ago. In fact, we recorded all the Sibelius symphonies with Herbert Blomstedt. And it hasn't come up for quite some time with us. I think it's been a number of years since we've played it, and it's been nice to get it back out and take a look at it again. We had our first performance last night. It went very well. Beautiful piece.
Well, and the brass really have a very important role in this symphony.
It is, particularly at the end. There's a big brass chorus at the end that's pretty dramatic and pretty loud, pretty taxing, actually. We had rehearsal yesterday morning for it and then did it again last night. So we had kind of two times through it. I was pretty pooped at the end of the evening performance.
And it's so uplifting that everyone is just going to be floating on air when they go out the door.
Yeah.
You have worked with Michael Tilson Thomas since he joined the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra. Tell us about this amazing conductor.
I've known Michael for a long time because in addition to working with him here, I also worked with him in the Baltimore Symphony when I was there years ago. And actually, when I was in college, the first time I saw Michael conduct was at C.Y. Stevens Auditorium. He's conducting the Boston Symphony, and they did Borodin's Second Symphony. I have a real vivid memory of that and Michael conducting. So that also has kind of gone full circle for me. It was interesting that we were supposed to play at the University of Michigan, which is a fairly regular stop for us in the Midwest, and it got changed, and so they were looking for a venue, and I told the person at the symphony, you ought to call Ames and see if they have a spot open, and they did, and that's how it came that we're playing there in Ames. So I told Michael that I had, you know, one of my first experiences of hearing an orchestra was him conducting Gordy's Second Symphony, and he had a very good recollection of that. So, but Michael came here 25 years ago, and I was very excited when I knew he was going to be our next music director. Michael's a very versatile musician. He's a very adventurous musician. He can do just about anything and is willing to do just about anything. So we've done lots and lots of really innovative programs and, you know, repertoire that a lot of other orchestras don't do. And because of the nature of San Francisco, I think we're able to do things here in this community that you might not be able to do in other places around the country. I think that our audiences are also, you know, accepting of the innovative programming that we do.
Well, he's a composer, too, which I didn't really realize that. And he also founded the New World Symphony in Miami that is a training ground for gifted instrumentalists. And was that where you got started?
No, because that's something he started. I think he was already in San Francisco when that started. But I've had a number of students in the New World Symphony. I think I've had either three or four bass trombone students in that orchestra through the years. And that's a fabulous program. It's an old enough organization, and those young players have now found themselves in major orchestras literally all over the world. And he loves that. He loves young people, and he loves teaching, and he loves, you know, having an influence on young players. And so I think it's been a real labor of love for him. And, you know, it's a much different atmosphere for a conductor playing with students as opposed to professional musicians. We get a little jaded, you know. Sorry being facetious, but it is an entirely different atmosphere. And he's not restricted by rehearsal times and that sort of thing like he is with a professional orchestra. You know, we have pretty strict working conditions, which he doesn't necessarily have to adhere to down there. So I think he just finds it to be a much more creative atmosphere than might be with a professional orchestra.
I'm so glad that an Iowan got the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra into Iowa and coming to Stevens Auditorium.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Bravo to you for doing that.
Our principal percussionist is from Iowa as well, Jake Nisley, and he's been in the orchestra now, I think, about 4 years, something like that. And he's from Des Moines originally, and so he's in the orchestra as well.
Well, I had heard that there was also a flutist who was from Iowa.
Right, Linda Lucas. I think she's from Ohio originally, but she went to school at the University of Iowa. She did graduate work there.
So there are several Iowa links in the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra.
Yeah. Well, oddly enough, when I got in the orchestra here in San Francisco, I guess I was about 28 years old, something like that. And of course, I was from Parkersburg, as we already know. And the tuba player, Floyd Cooley, was from Knoxville, Iowa. And then Mark Lawrence, who was our principal trombone at the time, was from Keokuk. So three of us back there were from Iowa. And I think it's a tribute to Iowa and the music programs that we have in Iowa that produce that kind of talent. And it's really quite something. And we weren't the only ones. There are musicians from Iowa all over the place in symphony orchestras and jazz musicians and, you know, any number of musical performance groups.
Tickets to the San Francisco Symphony's March 29th, 7:30 p.m. concert at Stevens Auditorium, you can get those by going through Ticketmaster.com, or you can also go to the Iowa State Center ticket office. And the Celebrity Cafe speaker is Jeffrey Prater, who is Professor Emeritus from Iowa State University's music. They also are going to have a pre-show dinner, which is available. And the concertmaster of the Des Moines Symphony and ISU's music history professor, Jonathan Sturm, is going to be the guest speaker at this pre-show dinner. And you can get tickets and get your dinner ordered by going online to center.iastate.edu/pre-show dinner orders. That's all one word. Then also at this concert, they're going to have Sips and Symphony event, where you can purchase tickets prior or the day of, where they'll have wine and beer available before the concert and during intermission. So this sounds like it's going to be a great evening at Stevens Auditorium. Is there anything you'd like to add, John?
Nothing I could really think of. I have one little kind of amusing story. We were performing in Vienna years ago, and the trombone section in San Francisco got together with the trombone section of the Vienna Philharmonic. After concert, we were just sort of talking, and we asked the principal trombone player where his favorite place to play in all the places they played all over the world. And he didn't hesitate. He said, Ames, Iowa. And he didn't know that I was from, you know, Iowa. And I was sort of surprised. And I said, why is that? And he said, the people were so nice. So he said they all loved going to Iowa and playing there.
Well, so that's a tribute not only to Ames, Iowa, but to Iowa in general.
Yeah, so, exactly.
And that was from the Vienna Philharmonic Brass Section?
from the principal trombone player, yeah.
Wow. I'm very impressed.
Yeah, right, so was I.
Well, IPR thanks for today's chat goes to IPR's Chris Fenton and Alexis Hahn. And a great big thank you to the San Francisco Symphony's bass trombonist extraordinaire and Iowa native, John Engelkiss. And thanks for joining us today. And have fun when you're back in Iowa.
Okay, thanks very much. I'm looking forward to it.